It is worth noting that the resurrection moment is a burst of tears and shock, confusion and running. It is not so much angelic trumpets and joy and victory as we might think. Those happy feelings will follow, and with them will come the carefully crafted words of praise and thanksgiving to God for this great culmination. But today, there are no words. There are only blurred images, the persistence of dread amidst glimmers of hope, and other daring leaps of wild imagination. It's tears and shock and confusion and running. And your name, spoken well, making well. This moment is the eucatastrophe, to borrow a phrase from Professor Tolkien. The eucatastrophe is the surprise good ending. When everything is unraveling, the eucatastrophe is the sudden turn away from threat and disaster into a positive resolution. In the eucatastrophe, the corrupting artifact is destroyed by the very villains who covet it. The curious wanderer saves the kingdom from its curse by following their own romantic nature. The misunderstanding becomes clear just in time. The angel voice prevents a murder. The lion lies down with the lamb. We do not get a lot of these moments in our lives. Most of the time, if things go well, it is because of good planning, adequate resources, effective relationships, and advantages that we have inherited, fairly or unfairly. Most of the time when our plans turn out well, luck is a factor, and luck means all of the factors that I didn't know how to take into account. It's good luck if those factors produce a result that you want. For things to go well, you don't always need good luck, but you do need the absence of bad luck. Things don't always go well. Things in Mary's life had not always gone well. This was not the first time that she had cried. Now, we know very little about Mary Magdalene, and if you have ever heard about her, you've probably heard some of the stories that were made up about her long after her life, stories intended to make her seem less important, or more flawed, or perhaps more holy, or for some other agenda. But we can say that she knew about distress and pain. The Bible does not tell us much of her story, only notes that she suffered something catastrophic, and that Jesus healed her and delivered her into freedom, and she chose to follow him. She followed him as a charismatic teacher out in the wilderness and the countryside, as a fiery downtown preacher. She followed him as a political prisoner. With a small group, eventually, she followed him as he carried the cross all the way to the place of execution, all the way through a much larger crowd, excited to see him die. And now she follows Jesus even after he has died, looking for his body so that she can wash it and wrap it and bury it, because that's what you do with the bodies of people that you love. Mary knew about love and about loss and about tears. She had cried before, just like all of us have cried before. Just like Jesus, who had cried at the tomb of his beloved friend. That was a story that we heard at the beginning of Lent, how Jesus went to the tomb of Lazarus, and he comforted a different Mary and her sister Martha, both sisters of the dead man. And in the way that John tells the story, what happened next led directly to the tears that we hear today. Jesus brings Lazarus back from the dead into life, and this sign is so powerful that it finally seals his fate. Last week we heard how Jesus arrives in Jerusalem and the masses welcome him as miracle worker, as coming king, and the powerful put their plans into effect to slander him, isolate him, and kill him. In raising Lazarus from the dead and traveling to Jerusalem, Jesus made his moment. He brought confrontation into the center of power, and power killed him. So what went wrong? We might consider it poor planning, inadequate resources, trusting the wrong people, or just bad luck, the conspiracy of factors unaccounted for. On Friday, I heard the question that I am appropriately asked each Holy Week: why do we call it Good Friday? And we do not worship pain. We do not believe that suffering is greater than grace. We believe that life is a deeper truth than death. The eucatastrophe that emerges with these angelic visitors and dislodged stones and a discarded shroud point not to problems in the plan, but to God's grace as the final word. This resurrection is the beginning of true life. The eucatastrophe is not about good luck outweighing the bad luck, or even good planning that succeeds against the intentions of wicked people and their programs of banal cruelty, which continue to this day. The eucatastrophe is about grace. Grace is success when you didn't deserve it. It is life when you did not earn it. This grace is the nature and the name of the God that is revealed in Jesus. We find grace when we are bold enough or just tired enough to break down and cry. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Grace finds us when we are willing to go into the place of death and remain there, praying, listening. Blessed are those who are hungry for righteousness, for justice, for food. They shall be satisfied. We are in grace when we know our frailties and our failings, and we also know that we are loved and we have been set free to try again. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. We can see grace like the fingerprint of the Creator when we look at the hard things of this world and when we're willing to go into the places of death and power. By grace, we can believe even when we do not understand. Over the last 40 days, we have been preparing to hear these stories. Lent is a time of preparation, attention, prayer, and openness. It is also a time when the merchants of war have celebrated more death, the killing of civilians, the opportunities for profit. Members of this congregation joined the call for Canadian companies to no longer sell weapons to perpetrators of war crimes, a call that was not just ignored, but was rejected by the government and the opposition alike. We have been dwelling in dissonance these 40 days, sharing in a world of infinite love and creativity, but held captive by those who have money and weapons and thrones, those who have no creativity, no vision, no mercy. So it means something that we choose to follow the path of Jesus, following the one who walked towards death, who looked upon suffering and confusion and was moved with compassion, who, having loved his own who were in the world, loved them to the last, who took a towel and knelt and washed our feet and then said, "Do this for one another." What we do in a moment of crisis, perhaps in a world of crisis, is whatever it is we have prepared ourselves to do. If we have not prepared, we do nothing. Or we do sometimes something worse than nothing. If we prepared for violence, we lash out. If we have prepared to run away, then we flee. The powerful in this world make their plans well in advance. And if they cannot wait for a crisis to put them into effect, they make the crisis. Jesus asked us to prepare to be his disciples. He taught us how to pray. He taught us to leave behind the things that we do not need. He showed us how to be a good and gracious visitor in another person's home, how to cross over to the other side, how to listen to a different story, and bless the people who we once thought of as enemies. He instituted the sign of communion, inviting us to accept his broken body and his spilled blood, not as a curse, but as a source of strength and life, as a new sign and a binding promise of God's love for us. And he showed us that we have to wash each other's feet. He told us that there is nothing shameful in the work of a servant, and also that you will have no more masters among you. He taught the men how to listen, and how to serve huge crowds with food, and how to welcome the noisy chaos of children. And he taught the women how to take up space and lead and rest. This is how we dwell in dissonance. We become the dissonance. We refuse to be conformed to the patterns of this world, to lies, violence, to nihilism, to dissolution. We have to be the disharmony in the song of war, the wrench in the machinery. We have to join in the company of all of those who reach out the hand of friendship, regardless of religion, inclusive of difference, just delighting in dreaming God's dream. And this requires of us patience and practice and preparation, continuing with what we've been taught and always giving attention to hear new lessons. Now, I have said that this is preparation for crisis, giving us strength and wisdom and community. But it is also, always and ultimately, preparation for eucatastrophe. It is the practice of resurrection. It is the presence of the life-giving Spirit. Mary was prepared to venture out alone into the dark. The others were prepared to believe her, and they came to the tomb at her word. And they were all prepared to go into the place of death and look into the tomb. And Mary was also prepared to wait. She waits at the tomb, and she weeps, and she hears, and she speaks, she reaches, and she refrains. And she is commissioned to preach the good news to the disciples and to the whole world. And for that, she is honored to this day as the apostle to the apostles. She was prepared for this, even if she didn't know it. She was ready to witness this sudden turn towards goodness. Through our preparation, we are open to eucatastrophe. We practice resurrection. We believe and we trust. We commit and we rest. So in this way, listen for the voice that speaks your name, the voice that makes all things well, all things new. Listen and believe. Amen.